Your money can do more than you think. It can help protect the climate, support biodiversity and empower women around the world. Karin and Sina from Eukocredit take you on a journey in their podcast Ethics and Euros. From coffee farms in Peru to solar energy projects in India, you'll discover the real impact your money can have. Your money, your choice. Tune in now. Hello and welcome to a new episode of Ethics and Euros. My name is Karin and I work for Eukocredit in Germany. Yeah, today I want to talk about capacity building. It's a term that might sound a little bit technical and complex at first, but it plays quite an important role at Eukocredit. And I think it's one of the main factors that differentiates us from other financial institutions. So to help me unpack and understand what capacity building really means, I'm joined today by Barbara Rademacher from Eukocredit International. Barbara, nice that you're here. Thanks for joining.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Karin. I'm really happy to be here.
You are the capacity building manager at Eukocredit. Could you briefly introduce yourself? Like, who are you and what do you do at Eukocredit?
Yeah, so my name is Barbara Rademacher, as you just mentioned. I'm a Dutch citizen and I've joined Eukocredit in January 2021. But my journey in impact work was much earlier. And I started it in 2004 when I moved to Bolivia from the Netherlands. And that's where I first got involved in poverty alleviation. I worked with a local NGO that was focused on biodiversity protection and supporting indigenous people, mine workers, smallholder farmers. So all kinds of marginalized people living in poverty, but very much connected with nature. And it was a hands-on grassroots work that really opened my eyes. In 2011, I moved to Peru and I stepped into the world of impact investing as an impact investing officer. And that's where I saw firsthand how access to finance can really create tangible change. But I also realized that loans and equity alone is not enough and that organizations need more than only capital. They really need support to strengthen their operations, grow sustainable, and truly amplify their impact. So all those insights have shaped the way I approach my work in capacity building ever since.
I've mentioned in the beginning, it sounds quite complex, capacity building, and maybe it's not so easy to grasp what it really is. So could you explain in like quite simple words, what's capacity building? What's the benefit of it?
Yeah, so I myself started to understand what capacity building is and what the impact is when I was working as an investment officer. And during the due diligence visits, so you, as an investment officer, you visit the investees, as we call them in Eukocredit, we call them partners. You visit them to see what the risks are of your loan. And that's what we call due diligence visits. And you sit down, so I would sit down with the partners and hear them talk about the changes they'd made, not only financially, but also operationally. And they would tell me how they would develop new financial services or implement risk management frameworks, all thanks to capacity building projects. That's when it really, really clicked for me. It's not just about the money. Yeah? It's about empowering organizations. And that's what we do with capacity building. It's empowering organizations with tools and knowledge they need to grow and thrive on their own terms. I think that's also really, really important. And those meetings were like, showed me how powerful that capacity building can be. And that's how I really was attracted to the line of work I'm in right now.
Could you break it down and give us one example? It doesn't have to be from Eukocredit, just to be more tangible for the listeners. What could it be? Capacity building.
Yeah, so we have a project in Eukocredit that is really nice that we're wrapping up right now, which is supporting small family-owned SMEs, small and middle-sized enterprises. And it sounds like a niche topic, right? Succession and governance in small and middle-sized enterprises. But when these small businesses struggle with that, it can disrupt entire supply chains, especially for farmers mm-hmm. that rely on them to buy their crops. And many of these SMEs, not only in emerging market, but also in our own realities in Germany and the Netherlands, have these challenges. And our investment officer in Kenya had already identified in his portfolio that this was of essence to improve their sustainability, but also our risk as investors. So it was a topic that had been a long time in his mind. And that's also how we work. So we really look at what our investment team says. So we worked with a local university called Strathmore University in Kenya. And we help these businesses to create succession plans and establish a family business constitution. In Dutch, we would call it the family business Bible. I'm not sure if you in Germany have that same term, but it shows how sacred and how important it is. Mm-hmm. And what it consisted in is a 5-day intensive course of training. But what is really an added value, because there is a lot of training out there, is the personalized coaching. Mm-hmm. So they would have monthly on-site coaching tailored to every family need and business need. And it's a great example of how this targeted, tailor-made support can build long-term resilience and stability, and not just for the business itself, so for our investment for the SME, but for everyone connected to it, as and in this case, as I said, also the smallholder farmers that supply to these businesses. Yeah.
Yeah, we've jumped already right into the core of this topic. Really nice.
Yeah.
Let's go maybe one step back, because I think there are people who might be listening who have never heard of capacity building before and who might even not know Oikocredit. So how are Oikocredit and capacity building connected? What's the relationship between those two parts?
Yeah, I think what we at Oikocredit believe is that finance is only part of the equation. And to truly be able to support our partners, we also need to help them strengthen their performance, not just financially, but also socially and environmentally. Because real lasting impact means that reaching people in a way that's sustainable and meaningful. And what sets us apart as Oikocredit is that our support doesn't stop with our investment portfolio. And our mandate goes further. We also work with organizations outside our portfolio. So businesses in the sectors we invest in, but not the businesses we invest in. Mm-hmm. Because we know that strengthening that broader ecosystem helps unlock more potential. So by supporting those partners and non-partners, we're helping to build stronger and more resilient sectors that can deliver impact at scale.
And if we look a little bit closer at capacity building, let's talk some numbers. So how many projects do we currently have? And what kind of projects are there? You mentioned already one example, two examples.
So we do 50 capacity building projects this year at this moment, so in June, and we are reaching over 100 organizations. And what we do is really diverse. So sometimes it's about strengthening core business skills like financial management or marketing. And other times it's more technical, like helping improve sustainable farming practices or financial services for smallholder farmers. But in many cases, it's about organizational strengthening. So governance, training, leadership training, and building stronger internal structures.
So you've mentioned those projects. And as I understood, we as Oikocredit, we provide finance or some other resources and give it to the partner organizations, but not the end client itself. Is this correct?
Exactly. So we work with our organizations so that they have more outreach, better outreach to the end clients, so to their end clients. So it's not that we work directly with the end clients. We make sure that our partners, the local organizations in the field, have a better outreach to those end clients we want to serve.
Yeah, that sounds really great. And I think there are a lot of projects that have a huge impact. Mm-hmm. But of course, always the question leads to money. So it needs to be funded and financed. And the question would be, where does the money come from?
So the money comes from our investors. We have investors that provide us with grants, and we also have donors. But it's also important that the organizations themselves commit to the program. So they always have a financial contribution to it. Mm-hmm. So that's really important that they also are engaged. And that's the way we secure the commitment.
And could you say how much is that in a percentage of Oikocredit's total expenditure?
Per year, how much we spend on capacity building is around 1 million euro. Mm. It doesn't come from the investor's capital. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different flow that comes in through we have a special foundation for it, but it's an independent flow that comes from grants. So it's really not the capital that investors would invest in us.
So when you mentioned before that the money could come from investors, you meant by
donations.
Investors? Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Donating separately from their investment.
Okay,
money.
Understood.
Yeah.
And I think everyone agrees that's definitely a field that should be financed. What would be the consequences of not investing this 1 million euros every year in capacity building, let's say for both, for our partner organizations, but also for our investors? Is there an effect you could see?
I think for both, the effect would be that we don't reach what we want to reach in terms of performance financially and environmentally and socially. And that's what we really, especially now that we're living in a polycrisis environment, it's really important to support our partners to remain resilient, to be able to provide those financial services that our end clients so much need to in the climate crisis that we're living in, in all the wars. They also affect our end clients. So it's really, really important we provide more than equity and loans and support them with capacity building so that they will remain able to provide those services.
And I've mentioned at the beginning that that capacity building, in my view, is something that differentiates us from other financial institutions. Is this true?
There are others that provide capacity building projects. I think what really sets us apart that we are looking at also unlocking the investability of the focus sectors, that we have this mandate that we can also work with organizations that are not part of our investment portfolio. And the other thing that sets us apart is that we really focus our capacity building practice in what the benefit is for the end clients. So yes, we work internal management, but how does that benefit the end client? And that's how we focus our work.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting that we also work together with initiatives who are not partner organizations yet, one may say.
Yeah.
So what's the logic behind that? Like, is it to work together with them to establish maybe a relationship for them to be able to work with us later on? Or is there a different meaning behind that?
Both. So it's really to see how we can make them investable for us, but also to secure, to strengthen the ecosystem. And that's, for example, smallholder cooperatives, providing them with loan so that they can have, we provide capacity building, but also we have a support facility, enterprise support facility, where we can provide them with small loans so that they can develop a track record and then subsequently be financed by maybe one of our financial inclusion partners or financial institutions. And in that way, also providing that impact to smallholder farmers that are served by those cooperatives that cannot access financial services at this moment.
Yeah, I think so far we've talked about capacity building in general, and I think we all agree that it's important. But let's become a little bit more concrete and talk about also your role as a capacity building manager and talk about the job that your team, it's you and some colleagues that work in the field of capacity building. So what you do in your everyday working life. Could you take us along, like, how do you find projects and what are the criteria for the selection of those projects?
Yeah, so what we do is the process typically begins with our investment team. So our investment officers are the ones that have the relationship with partners and also with potential partners and often identify that that capacity building need. And basically what they do is they connect us with the partner. And then we develop the project idea. So what we do is we have these open, honest conversations with a partner because we need to align and really understand well what the problem is they want to solve. It's their problem, and also agree on what the most effective approach will be, and that we make sure that it's not applying a one-size-fits-all solution. So local challenges obviously need local solutions. So we try to focus on having local business providers, but it doesn't mean that we don't bring in once in a while international expertise. And the key there is to adapt that expertise to the local context. So we try to balance that, right? So mm-hmm. the local insight, global knowledge, and strong alignment. And we set the stage for a capacity building project that doesn't just tick boxes, but actually drives a meaningful, lasting and performance improvements. Yeah.
And how does the process look like? So there's an initial idea, a partner approached you and said, like, look, I've got this idea, get in touch with this initiative. And how do we come to the end where it's finally implemented? What's the process in between?
The process is a little hard to explain because it's different with every project. So that's why maybe it's too complex and maybe too technical for the interview, I would say. I think what's also really important is that it's really the partner sitting in a driver's seat. So yes, if a partner doesn't feel the need for it, so we can say you have a key person risk. If a partner says, that's my problem, not yours, it's none of your business, we don't feel it's an issue, then it doesn't make sense to do a project. So it really is about that there's a little tension in what we want, or the investment team, there can be a tension in what the investment team says, hey, you have an issue. And the partner says, well, I don't see it as an issue. And that's where we do not do capacity mm-hmm. building. And that really helps. It makes it much clearer what our framework is. So that's why the open conversation is so important. Say, look, we see this, right? Do you recognize it? No, what is it then what you see as an issue? So that's very key in the whole capacity building practice, that you don't impose where you think the problem is or solutions to the problem. And because they might either not identify it as a problem, or they might not see that the solution that you're providing is what they need. And that makes it so interesting, the work that we do, is that, that it's them that are in the driver's seat and in the center.
And how do you evaluate at the end the projects?
Yeah, so that's a good one, because measuring success, yeah, it mm-hmm. it requires a bit of nuance. It's not about quick wins or tick box mm-hmm. exercise. We track environmental, social, and governance scores like everyone else, but real improvement takes a bit more time. So what is really crucial is to ensure that knowledge is transferred, but also absorbed by the partner. And to promote this, what I just said is you put them in the driver's seat. And so it's owned by them and led by them. But we're critical about defining and monitoring key objectives. Mm-hmm. We do it per project, and we define it, the KPIs, the key performance indicators per project. If there's shared commitment, it really improves the outcomes of the project.
And how long are those projects, or how long do the projects usually run?
It depends.
Also, of course, not a one-fits-all solution.
No, not a one-fits-all solution. I would say an average of 12 months, from 6 to 18 months is our preferred.
You've been working with EcoCredit for, what's that, like 3-4 years now?
Four
and a half years already. So if you look back at the time, can you give a specific example of a project where capacity building has had a particularly huge impact? They all have, hopefully, impact, but one that really struck with you, like, this was amazing.
Well, the amazing and that touched me and it had impact, but really touched me was one we did in Bolivia, maybe because...
you were working there before.
Yeah. So it was like the... mm-hmm. No, it really had to do with what happens when finance meets compassion. Mm-hmm. And in this initiative, a financial institution, a partner of ours, was teaming up with an NGO to support women who had been involved in the sex industry. which was connected to illegal mining sector. So you can imagine that illegal mining sector, illegal prostitution, it's a very marginalized group of women. And brave women as well, because they were working to build their new lives, not just for themselves, but they also had children.
Mm.
And to help them start it, so this financial institution partner and that NGO had developed a program. So where they received entrepreneurship training and also financial literacy training. And to help them then get started, and where we provided the finance, was interest-free loans. So they had a revolving fund where the women would receive a loan from and would pay back to. Interest-free, but it was a really nice revolving loan where it also motivated women to pay back, because they would know that the next time another woman from the same, one of them would be financed again. So it really motivated to pay back the loan. And it really touches me because, again, it's not about money. It's about giving them tools to build a financial identity, because that's what you need, a track record that opens the door to formal financial services and long-term stability. So, yeah, it's a story of a lot of resilience of the women and of what's possible when we invest in people's potential.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
That's true. So if we look at the current status of capacity building, and we also look a little bit into the future now, and we look at the current situation of the partner organizations and their end clients, you've mentioned already some issues they're facing and some capacity building projects. But what would you say, in which areas is capacity building currently most urgently needed?
What I just told, the example of those women, is access to finance or two. I think most of them is unconnected with each other. So access to finance to marginalized group. So women, still women, they have been in the center of the attention of microfinance for some time now, but it's still a vulnerable group, especially now that you see that also microfinance being digitalized more and more. It's important to also remember that women have less access to mobile phones. So we have to really be aware of that and make sure that they are not excluded again from financial services. But there are also other marginal groups that lack decent access to finance. With people with disability, it's a group that is often forgotten. And also young people don't have assets that can be used as guarantees. So it's also a really, really important group. And climate change, yeah, is affecting all these target groups and also the organizations that we work with. I mean, extreme weather events caused by climate change, like floods, droughts, frosts, cause energy cuts and field harvests, for example. So it's making sure that marginalized groups remain having access to finance and making sure that climate change is addressed and that our organizations, besides the financial inclusion organization, but also renewable energy partners and agricultural partners, are being supported to become climate resilient.
Yeah, in preparation for the podcast, of course, I thought if I ask you this question, climate change, the topic will arise at some point. Do you have an example for a project which Oikocredit runs currently regarding climate change, climate resilience, something like that in this direction?
We have a project that we're now currently rolling out in East Africa. We call it AgriHubs, and it's focused on agri-value chain financing. And what it does is it provides financial inclusion partners another view, a more global view on agri-finance. So they look at how farmers are connected to other actors in the value chain, not only the actors that buy their crop or buy from the one that buys their crop, but also from providers, input providers, from technical assistance providers. So it gives the whole value chain. And what we start off with this program or this methodology, it's a loan methodology, and that's also a very nice aspect of this program, is that it's a south-south experience. So this is a value chain, a methodology, a loan methodology that was developed in Latin America that we've been transferring to East Africa. We've used the expert in this methodology that comes from Latin America, or we contracted that method and use them that we contracted, and we contracted local consultants. So there you go again. It's international experience, a South experience, international expertise being conceptualized, localized with local consultants. So that's a really nice aspect. And the first step, what you do there is you prioritize the crop that you want to develop that financial service around. And you define the criteria. And one of the criteria is indeed climate change. So you look at what crop is affected mostly by climate change and what is it exactly. And so you can say, for example, in one of the financial institutions, we see that the prices of inputs are being increased, and we see that our farmers are not using the inputs correctly, which also affects the yield and affects also the soil of their fields. So there, what we did was build this, what we call financial solution model. So the financial institution developed an alliance with an input provider where they would provide the fertilizer, but also soil management to how to use the input to make sure that the soil remains fertile and is well managed. And at the same time, by contracting this input provider, you can also negotiate better prices. Mm-hmm. And for this FI, which is cooperative, a SACCO, we call it in Africa, is very focused on agriculture. It was the first time they could provide input finance to smallholder farmers. So they were really, really excited about it. And also being able to give this added value of technical assistance through this input provider was an eye-opener. And we did it on one value chain. And what was so nice is that they themselves, and that's the whole thing. We're talking about climate change. I know it's about climate change, but they're now using it for other crops. And they're now looking at, okay, there's droughts. Can we do either something with solar pumps maybe to make sure that they have enough water for their crops and for their fields? So you have one example and it rolls out themselves if they really see the need. And this is a really nice example of how capacity building can work and about how we do it with climate change.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I also have to admit, I've just learned that it's not just capacity building in the topic of climate change, but it also responds to other fields and everything is connected. Yeah. So this is really interesting. And if you look ahead, let's say in the next 10 years, do you think those needs that you just mentioned, are those still the main needs like financial services, women empowerment? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's still crucial or will it have changed to another topic?
10 years is a long time.
That's true.
So I think our mission at Oika Credit will not change, right? So we've had the same mission the last 50 years and we will remain for the next 50 years so that I feel very secure about. We will be providing the financial services to these organizations and support them with capacity building or in other ways to improve the quality of the life of people with low incomes and their communities in a sustainable way. That's going to be the same. I think what's recently changed is our reality in the world, which is the poly crisis, right? So we have climate change, you have all kinds of wars going on. And I think that's going to remain our new reality as natural resources will become more scarce even, and climate change will affect our environment, societies, and the geopolitical situation. So, and the emerging markets will be hit hardest in all of this. So the challenges will remain the same. And I think support, we have to do it right and remain very much on top of what our partners need. And I think one of the things that also is the access to technology and how to use the technology in their local circumstances and how that technology can really support them in making them resilient, sustainable. Yeah, them and our end clients.
I think we are already at the end of our recording session. But before we finish, I want to ask you something. It might be a little bit more personal. So you've been working with Oiko Credit for 4.5 years, but you've been working in the field of capacity building for quite some time. So looking back on that time, what have you learned personally from capacity building?
That it really can transform a partner's performance, but you have to do it right. And it's not just about offering support. It's about making sure that that support fits the partner's needs, real needs, and reality. Yeah.
And I mean, the people have been listening now probably for half an hour, a little bit more. And we've been talking about capacity building and lots of aspects. And you can give them one key message. What would that be?
You know, I thought about this one and I feel that we're living in all of us, in such a complex and challenging times. And we can all, at least I feel sometimes anxious and absolutely overwhelmed with what is happening. And I think that's why now, more than ever, it's important to keep our hearts open, to stay connected, and to nurture a sense of solidarity with one another. And the truth is that financial return doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Mm. It's so intertwined, what I'm trying also to say in this podcast. It's really intertwined with social and environmental well-being. And if we neglect the communities around us or our planet, any financial gain we want to make will be short-lived and evaporate basically before our eyes. So taking care of each other and the world around us isn't just the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. And it's how we build something that really lasts.
That's really an insightful and really heartwarming key message that you're giving us here. Thank you so much for that. And also, thank you for coming here and for joining me on this topic of capacity building. It was really insightful. And I hope I speak also for the listeners that we've taken away a lot of new insights. So thank you for being here and for this really nice conversation, Barbara.
Thank you for having me, Karen. It was really nice to be here.
Yeah, and also thank you to you listeners. Thanks for tuning in. If you don't want to miss any future episodes, just hit the subscribe button and so you will be informed when the new episode is out. Yeah, and if today's episode got you curious about investing with Oiko Credit, check out our website or send us a message. We're happy to hear from you. Thanks again. Take care and goodbye.